This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're listening to The Matt McNeil Show. I am not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt, who is out looking at colleges with his daughter for a long weekend. I don't know where he's going exactly, but he's probably having a kind of a pleasant weekend. I did a little bit of that with my daughter once upon a time, and it was quite fun. You may also be listening to us later tonight, which to you would be right now, but to us is later. It's difficult to explain. It has to do with the time and space continuum, which in reality we could discuss doesn't totally exist. So really, it's simultaneously happening. It has to do with matter and the universe and I don't think we're going to discuss that, though. But you may be listening to us in Chicago on WCPT 820 in Chicago. Welcome in for this hour. And I wanted to clear something up from yesterday. By the way, Brett is here with us. Hey, Brett, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Yeah, that time travel is pretty tough to manage. I have an Infinity Stone, though, so that kind of helps.
Oh, okay.
A little Marvel reference there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's why I don't get it.
Yeah. Matt McNeil would get it. He's a Marvel guy. Yeah. All right. Blame you, though.
It's me here, not Matt. Yeah. Okay. So try and think of something else. Like, I don't know, something having to do with.
That's right. Todd, not Matt.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yesterday, we tripped over the word in an article I was reading, octogenarian. And I looked it up, and we were both wrong. It actually means somebody from the city of Octogenaria. And that's why it was referring to Joe Biden, because Joe Biden is actually from Octogenaria, Delaware. So he's an octogenarian.
Wait, is that the name of the real town he's from?
No, I'm totally kidding about
that. Okay, I was going to say, I don't think that's a real town in Delaware.
Yeah, no, you were right.
Yeah.
You were right. It's somebody between the age of 80 and 89. And there are names for other decades, too, like 50 to 59 is quinquagenarian.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, if like there's a quartet, there's a quintet, which would be five people. What is it when it's six people?
Oh, that's when we're getting into the fun one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sex something on there, right?
Yes.
I don't know what the end of it is.
Yeah. Well, that would be a sextet. So this, if you're between the age of 60 and 69, and I'm not going to comment on whether or not I am, you're a sexagenarian.
Yeah, that sounds like a different term than referring to an age, but that's what the term technically is.
Yeah, it is that. I'm with you. It has more than one meaning in my mind, but that's what you become when you become 60 years old. So it's not all just doom and gloom and dark and the lights go out, or again, if we get into the whole meaning of the universe and everything, maybe the lights don't go out, I'm talking about when you die. Yeah, I think people primarily tune in to talk about politics, though, right? So maybe we should do that. I wanted to point out, first of all, so I cleared that up from yesterday, the word that you were right on, and I couldn't figure it out, even though it was right in front of me. Later on, I also kind of got my head wrapped around in a better way the whole thing going on with Judge Cannon and Jack Smith in the docs, you know, the Mar-a-Lago documents or the top secret documents case in Florida. And we'll talk about that. But I was thinking that we would point out again, because like I said, you know, everybody's got their hair on fire about polls and things like that. And everyone's worried about Biden's polling and his approval rating, even though it's probably not even as bad as or at least equal to what Obama's was at this time in 2012. Obama was having trouble in the polls. Nate Silver called him toast at the end of 2011. He said Obama is toast. And, of course, we know that Obama went on to win that election by 5 million votes. And, of course, a huge win in the Electoral College as well. It is a little worrisome that what happened in 2016, where it was just, I think it was about 70,000 votes, is what made Trump win the Electoral College in three states. And that's because of third-party voting. So, but I'm here to remind you of other things that we got to keep remembering, because it's easy to lose track of all of these things. The shambles, the absolute shambles that the Republican Party is in right now. I'll be playing you a clip that is kind of unbelievable, not right now, but in a little bit. I heard you bring the pot up there. Where you're going to notice that, wow, that Republican is not talking about a Democrat. That Republican is talking about one or two other Republicans. So the infighting going on is certainly not helping them. And for the first time, possibly in my, well, at least since probably the 1970s or 80s, the Democrats are doing a good job of working together. We had some trouble there. 2016, we had some trouble. You know, Bernie was, I call them the Bernie bots. Now, I've always agreed with Bernie Sanders, but we didn't stick together in 2016. So, and it was because he was running, which he has a perfectly good right to run, and he had followers, which they have a perfectly good right to follow him and fight for him and argue for him. But it broke the party in half, or not even in half, but it broke the party down enough that we did not have the power to hold up to the election, and we lost the Electoral College. We still won the popular vote by 3 million votes, but we lost the overall election, and that's why Trump became president. And now the Republicans just cannot keep it together. We have the resignations going on. You know, don't even talk about that anymore, right? Because it happened a couple weeks ago. See if I can find, I have way too many notes going on, but Ken Buck, Mike Gallagher, they're the latest ones, and both Ken Buck and Mike Gallagher did it in a way to trip up the system. Mike Gallagher is waiting to resign, or I guess he's kind of resigned, but he's waiting to actually officially resign until after the date where they would have a special election. So his seat is going to remain open. There's going to be nobody from his district sitting in Congress. That brings the number of the Republicans down. And I'm actually hearing talk from some Republicans about if they do this ouster of Speaker MAGA Mike Johnson, they run the risk of bringing in Speaker Jeffries. And this is something that I started saying, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago. But when I was saying it, I was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. But, you know, we come so close to something crazy like that happening, where the Republicans have the majority and all of a sudden we would have a Democrat be the Speaker of the House. That could happen if one of the sitting GOP members, especially after Gallagher leaves, because Ken Buck is already gone. He did the opposite. He did it so that there would be a special election in his district, which is where Lauren Boebert just moved to. So if Lauren Boebert were to run for that special election, which will happen in July or August or something, I believe maybe June, she would have to resign right now, because she can't even announce that she's running in a special election while being a sitting congressperson. So Ken Buck sped up his resignation so that it would trip up Lauren Boebert. Because, you know, the vast majority of Republicans in the House would love it if Lauren Boebert was gone. They would love it if Marjorie Taylor Greene was gone. They would love it if Matt Gaetz was gone. So that's what Ken Buck did. And then Gallagher did the opposite. He said, no, so if he resigns before something like April 19th, then they would have a special election. And that's why he's holding on. That's why he didn't just walk last week. He's waiting until after that date so that there cannot be a special election, so that his seat will remain open, totally tripping up, especially the Speaker of the House. And of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene did put up a motion to vacate the speakership. Now let's go through some other things. Nikki Haley voters in exit polls. Now we've talked about that the exit polls are accurate because it's actual people walking out of a polling place answering a question, who did you vote for? Yeah, they could be lying, but are they gonna? You know, they're just regular people. They're coming up, and most of them seem proud that if they voted for Nikki Haley. And then the next question is, if it comes down to Biden and Trump, who would you vote for? And in different states, there were different percentages, but sometimes the percentage exceeded 50. I think in one state, it even exceeded 60% of Nikki Haley voters on primary night. These are Republicans who just showed up for a primary vote. So they're the most engaged Republicans. They don't want to miss the primary vote. And many, many of them are saying that they will vote for Biden. And many more of them are saying, I'm not going to vote for Trump. I can sure tell you that. Now, Trump needs to be gaining voters. He lost the election by 7 million votes in 2020. He needs to be gaining voters, not losing them. And what does he do then when you put a microphone in front of his face? He says, if you gave money to Nikki Haley, then you're not part of MAGA and you never can be. We don't want you. He's pushing people away. You know, I mean, it's crazy, is it not? The answer is, it's crazy. And it's not just Nikki Haley voters. Donors, small and large. He's pushing them away. So we'll go down more reasons and things going on that we got to remember so that we're not nervous all the time. But we got to take a break. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. I'm short now. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. And we're also on in Chicago, WCPT 820 Chicago. Welcome to the Chicago people. We're talking about, and by the way, if you want to call, we had a couple of good phone calls yesterday. If you would like to call in and be part of the conversation, call 952-946-6205. That's 952-946-6205. I never talked like that when I was on the radio. Why do people imitate radio people by talking like that?
Who do they base that off of? Is that Wolfman maybe they're going it all off of?
Yeah, I think.
That's kind of impression? Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of like when I was a kid, like in high school and stuff, there were some pre-recorded sort of stations that would have that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know exactly the voice you're talking about. Yeah. I think most people probably do, yeah, if they are of a certain age.
Yeah, yep, yep. And I am, am I a quintagenarian or a octa? I'm not going to reveal.
I hope you're not an octa one. No, no.
Yeah.
I'd be impressed if octa. You were. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say.
No,
if you're
sexta, yeah. Sexy. The sexagenarian, I could be a sexagenarian. And if I'm not now, I will be soon. That's another voice. Why do they keep doing that voice? That's the FM radio voice.
Yeah, kind of a little FM, yeah.
Yeah. Going out to all you sexagenarians. Here's a new one from... No, we're talking about the problems that the GOP is having, is what we're talking about. Now, they have a candidate that won't campaign. I don't know if he's refusing to campaign. He's apparently golfing, staying up all night ranting on Truth Social. And I love how also you can just say Truth Social and move on, but almost everybody, including me, says Truth Social or whatever his thing is he has, because it just doesn't seem legitimate at all. But, there's news about that too. So much to go through. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. But, so he had nothing on his schedule, and Joe Biden went out to, I don't know, in 18 days, he went to, made like 12 stops or something in the battleground states. Barn burning, barnstorming, that's what it is. Barnstorming the country was Joe Biden. Trump was just sitting in Mar-a-Lago making crazy videos that are poorly lit with his eyes seemingly swollen shut and his makeup, different shades of going between brown and orange, not getting close enough to the ears and hairline, tons of footage of him doing that. But then his campaign said, no, he's hitting the road. Now, they can't afford to have him hit the road anymore. He canceled a rally in Arizona a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and instead he went to Ohio. I think it was longer than that ago. But anyway, he hadn't had any events like these events where he's actually meeting with people and kind of having not even a press conference, because he almost never wants to answer questions unless it's outside of a courtroom. And then you can ask him, hey, what kind of a car did you drive in on? And he'll just go, the whole thing is a sham and it shouldn't be happening. This judge is corrupt. He's already got his answer. It doesn't matter what your question is. But anyway, so last Tuesday, just 2 days ago, he goes out to two events, one in Wisconsin and one in Michigan, right? Battleground states. And then he says, migrants are animals. The Democrats say that they're humans, but I will not say that they're human beings because migrants are animals. Okay. Believe it or not, that does not go well even with Republicans. And I'm talking about 95% of Republicans. There are always going to be the craziest of the crazy who are going to go, yeah, they're animals. So then he goes to Wisconsin. That was in Michigan. Then he goes to Wisconsin, and he says that China has electric cars. We don't need electric cars. We have gasoline. Which just points out that we are behind on electric cars. I want to play you something here. I wasn't going to do it right now, but where is it? Can I play this? Okay. This is a clip of Pete Buttigieg answering some questions on Fox News.
Let me just pursue that if I could with you. Tesla sales fell 8.5% the first quarter of this year. Ford this week is laying off two-thirds of its workforce at the F-150 electric Lightning plant. It's also scaling back a battery production facility because of sagging sales. EV sales are nowhere near what this president wanted or expected, yet the administration continues to shove them down consumers' throats. Why?
Well, let's be clear. Consumers have wanted and purchased more EVs every single year than the year before. And, Tesla is facing more competition as GM and Ford and Stellantis and other competitive players start to make sure they get a piece of the EV market. Let's be clear that the automotive sector is moving toward EVs, and we can't pretend otherwise. Sometimes when these debates happen, I feel like it's the early 2000s, and I'm talking to some people who think that we can just have landline phones forever. The reality is that the automotive sector is moving toward EVs, and the U.S. can either fall behind China or we can claim the lead. President Biden wants to make sure that those EVs are made in America, especially, again, as more Americans choose EVs every single year than the year before. We've got to make sure that those are made on American soil in places like northern Indiana, where I grew up, places like Michigan, where I live right now. During the Trump administration, China was really able to build an advantage in the EV market, and obviously not because they're big environmentalists over in China, just because that's the economically smart play. We've been working to make sure that that advantage comes back onto American soil.
So that's Pete Buttigieg giving a very good answer to Fox News following Donald Trump into this EV thing. They want to make electric vehicles some sort of enemy, some sort of woke thing. Even though they have Elon Musk, they got Elon Musk to reveal the Nazi that he is. So now Elon Musk is a right winger. Donald Trump is begging Elon Musk for money to pay for his legal bills. And they're still attacking Tesla, which, of course, is Elon Musk poured a bunch of financials into Tesla and made the company successful. I myself have a Tesla. When I got mine shortly before Elon Musk revealed himself as a Nazi. And it was when Teslas were cool and progressive feeling, you know, because they were electric cars. I still love my Tesla. But it seemed like there were none on the road when I got mine in November of 2020. And a year later, it seemed like I would see tons of Teslas. And then now there's not even just Teslas. It's all kinds of EVs. So we'll talk more when we come back. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Me on the drums, Brett Johnson on the bass with its cool distorted bass pedal that he brought today. Love that pedal. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show, and also welcome to Chicago people listening to WCPT in Chicago. We're talking about the troubles the GOP is having, yet everyone's afraid that Trump is going to win the election. They can't raise money. They've lost their small donors. They've lost their large donors. A lot of the large donors went to Nikki Haley, and then Trump basically told them to F off. He doesn't want their money. It's also been revealed that it looks like Trump doesn't really have money. So where's the money going to come from? There is serious financial problems going on. We talked yesterday about the fact that now in Florida, they have the initiative up on the ballot this November where they are going to vote to possibly codify Roe v. Wade in the state, essentially. And it's expected that that's going to bring an awful lot of voters to the polls because they're scared. And most people say that most of those voters are overwhelmingly going to be voting for that measure, in favor of that measure, and then going up the ballot and voting all the way up to Joe Biden. Whether or not that's true, the Republicans know that it's a possibility, so they have to spend money in Florida that they weren't previously planning on spending money in. Same thing's going on in North Carolina, where they have an absolute crazy guy that is running for the governorship on the Republican side. He lowered the chance of the Republicans winning that gubernatorial seat. And by getting this guy who's just saying, I mean, he's a Holocaust denier. It's just absolutely crazy. He says he wants women to not be able to vote. He wants to take away the vote for women. These are things he says into a microphone proudly. And of course, then the Republicans are like, okay, that's going to bring out Democratic voters. What do we got to spend money in North Carolina but they don't have the money to spend. They don't even have enough money to spend what they were planning on doing, and now they have to spend money in Florida and North Carolina that they were not planning on spending. You know who does have money to spend in North Carolina? The North Carolina Democratic Party. When I ran for office in 2012 here in Minnesota, it was called District 33 at the time, very red. The base vote, which means if nobody campaigns, the Democrats are expected to get 29% of the vote, and the Republicans, I can't remember their number, do the math. And I just went in and ran as hard as I could, which nobody had really done, especially on the Democratic side. The Republicans don't run because they don't need to. The Democrats don't run because they can't win. And we oftentimes didn't even have a candidate in the district I ran in. I ran as hard as I could. People got kind of excited just that they had a candidate who cared. And I brought the percentage points up 9 points. I got 38% of the vote. Now, that sounds horrible. But I got things started. The next time, we got a little more. And now, this last time, Lauren Bresnahan got almost 48% of the vote. We're getting into a place now where we can win in this, you know, deep red district. And we did it by having a decent candidate. And that's what North Carolina's doing. In some of their deep, deep red districts, what with the issue of women's reproductive health care, just like in Florida, they feel like, hey, this is our chance. This just might be our year. So they're making sure that they have candidates in every district as much as they possibly can. So now Republicans who've never even been challenged before are being challenged. So I think we got to take a break, right, Brett? No. Okay. I'm looking at the wrong thing on my clock here. No, we have 10 more minutes. Okay, I was almost done talking. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so in North Carolina, that's what's going on. So each one of those, of the Republican candidates now, they need to have money. They need to run a campaign. How are they going to do that when there's no money? The state parties of the Republican Party and the national. I mean, there's no money. And let me, and we do have a caller. Why don't we go to Robert from Columbia Heights? Hey, Robert.
Yeah, you guys were talking about radio voices earlier. And in the late 60s, early 70s, when I was a teenager, I used to listen late at night to, there was a station, I think it was country during the day, and at midnight it switched over to way underground rock and roll called KAAY Little Rock. And I think the name of the program they ran was called Bleecker Street.
Yeah.
So I would pull over to the side of the road on my way home from work and sit and listen to that show for about an hour before
he drove home
and eventually went home.
What did that guy sound like?
Oh, he sounded not quite like the Fox Man or Wolf Man, but
he was kind of like that.
The hippy dippy weatherman.
Okay. Yeah, there were people that would put on personalities back in those days. That was the fun times in radio. What right. Job did you have? You were driving home after midnight.
Oh, I was working back in the day when we pumped your gas and did everything for you. I was working at a Holiday gas station up in Duluth.
Oh, okay. And so you actually washed people's windows and put gas in their car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Checked their oil, everything.
Yeah.
Tires, you name it.
Yeah, that's another thing. That stopped like right when I got my license, so I had to pump my own gas. Well, thanks for calling in, Robert. That's a fun story to hear. A reminder of when radio was fun. It's kind of like watching American Graffiti for those.
They would play way off the charts rock and roll that nobody had ever heard of before.
Cool. That sounds cool. All right. Yep. All right. Thanks for calling, Robert.
Yep.
say, that was kind of a fun little little side road there that Robert gave us. Yeah, remembering where I was here with the Republican Party talking about money, and they're also really, really worried about women's reproductive health care rights because Donald Trump said, I got rid of Roe. That was me. Nobody else could have done it. They tried to do it for 54 years, and then I did it. And by the way, I want to note, why did he change it to 54 years when it was actually 50? He just does that all the time. Like when he said the flu of 27 or of 1917, when it was the flu of 1918, everyone knows it as the flu. You know, it was an outbreak. It was a pandemic, the flu pandemic of 1918. And he says 1917, like he's insisting on getting it wrong. It's so weird.
That is kind of weird. That's like insisting Christmas every year, December 26th. Yeah, just to get it off by one day is.
Yeah.
Just something's going on with them. He's either.
I'm right. Everyone else is wrong and they've been wrong forever.
Yeah, it's really weird. But yeah, so he keeps reminding people that he got rid of Roe v. Wade. And then he says, I want to please everybody with that issue, but you can't. You can't please everybody with that issue. Either women are dying or they don't have to die. And we happen to be on the side, the Democratic Party happens to be on side of the side of that women don't have to die unnecessarily. Whereas the Republicans are like, yes, they do. Women have to die. So they're stuck with that. And they try and change the subject. They've been trying to change it, and they keep getting further and further away. Now they're, you know, I talked about the guy who is still talking about woke policies in schools. That ain't cutting it anymore. So messaging, they got nothing, and they can't. And of course, Trump was telling them, "You better impeach somebody." So who do they put on? James Comer. And they keep putting him on the TV. Now he's saying, well, I just want accountability. What's better than if we can't impeach him, what's the use of impeaching him and then sending it to the Senate where they're just going to let it sit on the floor? Why don't we, I'm going to do criminal referrals. Oh, you're going to do criminal referrals for what crimes? Well, we don't know yet. It's not my fault Biden hasn't committed any crimes. And they keep putting him on. And, of course, it's impossible for them to be able to impeach Joe Biden. They have now impeached the Secretary of Homeland Security, I think. I can't even keep it straight in my head. I should have wrote it down. They've impeached one of his cabinet members, and they're apparently going to move that to the Senate. And nothing's going to happen. And this is what they're spending your taxpayer money on. This is the charade that's going on. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene says, I put up a motion to vacate the speaker's chair. And, you know, all hell breaks loose, basically. So they're totally 100% stuck. And they're starting to just fold in on themselves. And that's why they're having people resign and all of this stuff going on. And their presidential nominee is going to be sitting in court 4 days a week starting in like 2 weeks. So I want you to listen to this clip.
Where are you on Mike Johnson? Do you want to see change in terms of these CRs? Marjorie Taylor Greene says she's ready to take a motion to vacate the chair. Where are you on this issue, Congresswoman?
Oh, I don't support the motion to vacate the chair. In fact, the motion that was filed wasn't privileged, and so we're actually not even going to vote on it. And so, you know, Mike Johnson was dealt a bad hand. The former speaker, disgraced former speaker, set up a lot of bad
McCarthy
deals.
Kevin McCarthy is not disgraced. Congresswoman, Kevin McCarthy is not disgraced.
I consider him disgraced, absolutely.
Why?
Because he wouldn't tell the truth to the party, to the conference. He lied over and over again.
Come on,
he had a lot of bad deals
including
the debt ceiling bill last year.
That's not provable that he lied.
Absolutely.
But the bottom line on Ukraine funding, are you going to vote to send money to Ukraine? That's what Mike Johnson says he's going to bring to the floor.
Kevin McCarthy recruited a puppet to run against me in my Republican primary. You can go to puppetcatherine.com. He recruited somebody that can't win a general election in a purple district. Yes, he's a disgraced former speaker. When it comes to Ukraine funding, we'll be voting on supplemental aid, it sounds like, next week when we go back to D.C.
Don't you think you all should stick together in some ways? You are hanging on by a thread in the majority. When are you actually going to unite as a party and get things done?
Right. I agree, which is why Kevin McCarthy shouldn't go after fellow Republicans that can win in general elections in purple seats. You can go to nancymace.org and learn more about our campaign and chip in.
And you're still blaming Kevin McCarthy.
If you want to fight the establishment and fight D.C., fight somebody like Kevin McCarthy, who's coming after Republicans who can win in November.
Congresswoman, thank you. Good to see you, Nancy Mace.
So shut up. Shut up, Nancy Mace. That was Maria Bartiromo on Fox News. Having a representative from South Carolina, Nancy Mace, a crazy Republican woman. And this, they're both Republicans. This is a Republican asking about why the Republicans can't keep it together.
I'm going to say, that takes a lot to get Maria, I can't pronounce her last name, Bartiromo or whatever it is.
Bartiromo, I think.
Fired up at another Republican. I don't know if I've ever heard or seen that before.
I know. So that's going on Fox, and it happens more than once. There's infighting. A lot of infighting going on. Whole lot of infighting going on. Dynamo Dave, we only have like a minute left from Duluth. You wanted to talk about fact-checking. I think we just showed an example of that in Fox News.
Do you remember that show on VH1? It was called Pop-Up Video, where they would give little, you know, be like a Rolling Stones video, and then they'd give little tidbits of information while the
Oh, yeah, I do. I do remember that.
And why don't they do this during the debates or when they're interviewing these
That's
people?
A good idea. That's a good idea. You should be on the production staff of like MSNBC or something. Listen, we got to take a break. You're listening to AM 950. We'll be right back.
You remind me of the babe. Power of voodoo.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. And you're also listening to us this hour on WCPT 820 in Chicago. Later tonight, right now, simultaneously, because of the space and time continuum doesn't exist.
It gets more confusing with podcasting, too.
Yeah, right.
Then people listen whenever they want. And
yeah.
Is it now?
Is it happening
or
now?
In the future, we're talking to them.
Right. I mean, could you possibly do a podcast about issues that take place in the future? I think from what they're saying in quantum physics, yes. But we're not here to discuss all that. It sounds like you understand it better than me, and I don't want to look like an idiot like when you figured out what octogenarian meant and I didn't.
I wouldn't rely on me for science. That was my worst subject back in school by far. So we're in trouble.
What was your best?
Probably math, oddly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good at math, horrible at science.
Huh. They almost kind of seem a little hand in hand. But
yeah.
All right. I told you that I wanted to clarify a little bit about this thing going on with Judge Cannon and Jack Smith and people talking about the possibility that Judge Cannon will get thrown off the top secret document case where Donald Trump was holding on to documents in Mar-a-Lago. I assume that you know that whole story, that whole backstory. We don't have time to retell it. But there was a very fiery kind of clap back and forth. And there is a more simple way of explaining it than what we did yesterday between me and Jeff Stein. So I'm going to read a little bit to you, and then I'm going to clarify a little bit to you. This is from a post somebody put up that I thought was really well done. Smith and his team criticized Cannon's absurd request for them to prepare jury instructions that take into consideration Trump's false claim that he had the authority to take the classified documents. They have said that they will seek assistance from an appeals court if Cannon sticks with this baseless claims of Trump. Last month, Cannon made the highly unusual request that attorneys prepare two versions of possible jury instructions including the aforementioned one, which would assume that Trump had total authority to take any documents he wanted from the White House. In a quote from the Jack Smith writings, both scenarios rest on an unstated and fun. Okay, I'm going to start that sentence again. I'm going to spit the marbles out of my mouth. Both scenarios rest on an unstated and fundamentally flawed legal premise, namely that the Presidential Records Act, and in particular its distinction between personal and presidential records, determines whether a former president is authorized under the Espionage Act to possess highly classified documents and store them in an insecure facility. Smith also stated that Cannon is pursuing a fundamentally flawed legal premise because the Presidential Records Act does not override Section 793 of the Espionage Act that Trump is accused of violating. In a quote again from what he wrote, that legal premise is wrong, and a jury instruction for Section 793 that reflects that premise would distort the trial. He added that the Presidential Records Act should not play any role in the trial at all. So what happened here is that she is supposed to make a ruling on this. So Trump says, I can take anything I want. The Presidential Records Act says I get to decide no matter what it is. It's mine. When actually the Presidential Records Act says exactly the opposite, especially in Section 793. It says if it's a highly classified item, you know, the president can't proclaim it. That law had to be made because Nixon was trying to keep his tapes.
Oh, these are my tapes. Congress says they want them, but these are mine. So I will not be handing these over to Congress. I will be keeping them in my possession.
So they made the Presidential Records Act to clarify that Nixon could not do that. And we've all heard of the unanimous Supreme Court decision against Nixon in these matters back in the 70s. So Trump is so stupid that he gets it exactly upside down. You know, exactly opposite from what it actually is. And it's up to judge. The judge is supposed to decide what's lawful and not lawful. So she is supposed to say, No, we can't say this to the jury. She's supposed to make that decision. So Jack Smith is saying, hey, you're supposed to make that decision. Not us, not me, not them, and not the jury. The jury should never hear anything about this. Otherwise, it distorts the trial. And if you do not make a ruling on this, I'm going to take it to the 11th Circuit Appeals Court. When you do make a ruling, if I don't agree with it, I'm going to take it to the Appeals Court. But if you decide that you're not going to make a ruling on it right now, I'm just going to go around you and go straight to the appellate court. That is what's going on here. And that is why people are saying there's a chance that Judge Cannon could get thrown off of this case, off of this trial. In which case, would we maybe have a real judge who actually knows how to do this, or a judge who's not doing what Trump insists she does, maybe? Is that what's going on? Because she, last month, disagreed with that premise. But now she's saying, oh, well, I want the jury to decide. And if it gets to the jury already being seated, that's when the double jeopardy thing comes in. And basically, if that were to happen, Trump would be, he'd walk away. And would never be punished for this slam dunk of a case where he definitely would lose. Anyway, that's what's going on. I hope that clarifies it for you. Say, it's time for us to say goodbye to the listeners in Chicago on WCPT 820 Chicago. But if you're in Minnesota, we got another hour. The weird thing is, that hour is happening like 5 hours before the hour that we're signing off of right now in Chicago. My head is hurting. All right, we'll be right back in Minnesota. Goodbye to Chicago. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're listening to The Matt McNeil Show. I am not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson. And we've got Brett on the board as well here with you today. This bulletin just in. President Biden spoke by telephone with Prime Minister Netanyahu. The two leaders discussed the situation in Gaza. President Biden emphasized that the strikes on humanitarian workers and the overall humanitarian situation are unacceptable. He made clear the need for Israel to announce and implement a series of specific, concrete, and measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers. He made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. He underscored that an immediate ceasefire is essential to stabilize and improve the humanitarian situation and protect innocent civilians, and he urged Netanyahu to empower his negotiators to conclude a deal without delay to bring the hostages home. The two leaders also discussed public Iranian threats against Israel and the Israeli people. President Biden made clear that the United States strongly supports Israel in the face of those threats. So, most people would say too late, including me. We need to put pressure on Israel, and it looks like in a phone call today. This is a press release that just came out within the last couple of hours. Today they had a phone call together, and it sounds like, behind the scenes, people are saying that Biden is super pissed at Netanyahu, as is pretty much the whole world, pretty much all of Israel. It's very clear that Netanyahu is trying to keep this war going in order to stay out of jail. Who does that sound like? Netanyahu is the Israeli Trump. And no, that does not make me anti-Semitic. I'm talking about the Israeli government and the Israeli prime minister who has already been tried. He's already had legal trouble. The only reason he's not being sentenced in some way or another is because he's still the prime minister. Vast majority of Israelis do not want him to be the prime minister. And, of course, what's going on in the United States now, I did talk to my daughter when I was in New York with her a couple weeks ago, and she and her friends feel very strongly about what's going on, as do I think most, you know, civilized people about what's going on in Gaza right now. My daughter understands more than probably most people only because she hears me talking about stuff and she gets interested in it. She's been involved in politics to a certain degree, not, you know, a tenth as much as me, but she's exposed to it more than most of her friends. And I asked her, so would this make you, first of all, do you blame this on Biden? And she said, no, I don't blame it on Biden. But Biden should be doing more about it. And I said, would this make you not vote for Biden? And she goes, no. It would not make me not vote for Biden. What are you talking about? Because she knows the alternative is basically voting for Netanyahu to be the United States president. By the way, Ilhan Omar from a couple weeks ago was asked that same question. We all know Ilhan Omar is one of the most outspoken members of Congress against the Israeli government and Netanyahu. She keeps getting called anti-Semitic for doing so, and a lot of the reason that she gets called anti-Semitic is also because her skin is a different color and she's got a different religion than the people who like to accuse her of things like that. she was talking about very strongly about what's going on in Gaza a couple of weeks ago. And then she was asked the same question I asked my daughter. Well, does this mean you're not going to vote for Biden? And she goes, no, of course I'm going to still vote for Biden. What are you talking about? Now, my daughter did say, I don't know, some of my friends aren't as into it as me. Maybe they would stay home from voting. You know, and then it becomes a different subject. Well, they know if they stay home, and this is what I think should be said to people who are considering holding this against Biden and or not voting for Biden. Now, you can disagree with how Biden's handling it and how the Biden administration is handling it. And there are a lot of arguments going on within the administration, I'm sure. And there's even a little bit of leaks going on about that, that I think Biden doesn't mind even if the leaks get out. Because he needs as much support as he can get, because the United States has already signed all these pacts with Israel. This is one of the most difficult subjects in the world with and it's been years, decades. It's always a difficult thing as far as what's going on between the Israeli government and the Palestinians in Gaza. It's been that way for decades, and it's always a really difficult thing to deal with for any president. And I think, so, you know, I disagree with how Biden's doing it too. I think he could be stronger. I think his administration should have been stronger right away. Right away when we saw what was going on, you know, I'm talking about back in October, when we saw what was going on, what Israel was doing, I think that the United States should have said, hey, wait, whoa. If we're going to be giving you these weapons and money, then we need to see what you're going to do with it first. And that's kind of what Biden said to him today on a phone call. You guys need to figure out how to protect innocent civilians and aid workers. And you need to do that right now. And then you need to show us your plan for our approval. These are the steps that are just beginning to be taken. So I think the argument to somebody who's maybe thinking, well, I'm not going to vote for Biden because I don't agree with how he's handling, because this is atrocious, and it is. It's horrible, horrible, horrible what's going on in Gaza. But I think if somebody says, I'm not going to vote for Biden because of that, I think the first thing that should be said back to that person is, well, do you want Netanyahu to become president of the United States? Because if you don't vote for Biden, you're helping that along. Not Netanyahu and the exact person, but probably even worse, Trump. You're not helping anybody out by not voting for Biden. And I used to say this when Barack Obama became president as well. You know, we all supported him, and everybody supported him, and then, you know, it was such an exciting thing. It was so uplifting. It was all about hope. And it was the first African-American president. And it was just insane. I remember the night of his inaugural, or his actual election night and inaugural, the huge shindigs that were going on, and just the happiness. And it's easy to forget, not for me, but for a lot of people, how horrible the Bush administration was, the George W. Bush administration was. So not only, I mean, I remember Heidi and I watching, you know, on the inaugural, when the two presidents come to the inaugural speech together, then the new president takes the oath, does the speech, and then the outgoing president goes with his wife out the back of the building, gets on a helicopter, and flies away. We had a picture of George W. Bush and his wife waving goodbye on that helicopter, hanging on our fridge for like at least 10 years.
And some might say that's not long enough considering what he did with Iraq.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just faded because it was getting so old. So we finally took it down.
Kind of like he's faded too politically.
Yeah. Which, you know, I think that we need to remind each other every once in a while about these things. Same with Reagan. Same, you know, that's why I have the satellite view where I my whole approach is, you know, take a satellite view all the way down, see the whole planet Earth, including time, which we've been talking about the space and time continuum. Look back in time and then see if you can see something different forward in time. We need to learn from our past or we're never going to make a better future. That's kind of, if you go and listen to a satellite view, that's part of our intro. And you can go and listen to Satellite View if you go to am950radio.com and hit the programs button and scroll down, you'll find a Satellite View, my podcast, on that page. We're growing the listenership over there, and I'm having a lot of fun doing it. But we're talking about a serious subject now, so stop plugging things for yourself, Todd. I really think that, I was talking about how when Obama became president, it's like we got him elected, and then we all clapped, and we showed up for the fun parties and the celebration. And then he was alone in the Oval Office. And where were we? He was trying to pass the Affordable Care Act. And the Republicans were able to rip the teeth out. Obama didn't have enough support behind him. A lot of people kind of complain about, well, Obama didn't make the Affordable Care Act strong enough. Well, he didn't have anybody support. We got to, after we get him elected, we got to stand behind him. We got to show up and say, hey, here's what I want. And this guy's going to do it. You know? This is like what we did as a group. I tried to encourage people to do this to try and get paid family and medical leave that we finally now have in Minnesota after this last session. But I'm talking 10, 12 years before that. We were trying to get Minnesotans, small business owners, because that's what I am, and we wanted to point out, you know, the Republicans are owning the small business voice. And you know what? I don't agree with their version of it. They're against paid family and medical leave. You know how much it would help my business if I had paid family and medical leave? So I went to the Capitol, and whenever they were talking about it in a committee hearing, I would sign up to speak about it. I'd write myself some notes and I'd talk for 2 minutes. And then I tried to get other small business owners to do it too. And I did. Not just me, but I was working with some other people. But I was a big part of kind of holding people's hands as they went to the Capitol and spoke in these committee hearings. And that's what you need to do. So then it's harder for the Republicans to own the small business voice because you just had 5 small business owners coming in here and saying you're full of crap. You just had 5 small business owners come in and say, I want paid family and medical leave. I stand behind the people who are trying to pass this. I don't think that happened enough with Obama when he was working on the Affordable Care Act. Where were we? We were at home going, oh my God, I'm so glad Bush isn't president anymore. And then we turned the TV on. You know? I'm not saying that you're a jerk if you're living your life, because we got to live our lives. But that's kind of the thing in the United States that we have found here is that we want our freedoms, and we've been taking them much too much for granted for much too long. And look what happened. Look where we are now. Sometimes you can't just go home and watch TV. You know, we need more people to pay attention. And I'm not criticizing people who aren't doing, I mean, I will criticize you if you don't vote. The very least you can do to uphold all of this is vote. Whoever you vote for, you got to vote. I will criticize you if you don't vote. But there are other things. And we need to support the Biden administration right now. He's trying to make moves to get this to stop. Yes, we all might say it's not enough and it's not soon enough. But Let's stand behind him. He agrees with us. We got to remember, he is on our side. We shouldn't be against him. We should be against Netanyahu and what he's doing. And Joe Biden was on the phone with him today as representing all of us. So we got to support him in this. He went pretty far on this phone call today. So, again, maybe not far enough, maybe not soon enough. But this is a big deal because the United States for decades has had all of these agreements with Israel, and Biden is starting to kind of go against some of those by saying, hey, tell us your plan, show it to us for our approval, or we're going to make other decisions. And we need an immediate ceasefire. So he's trying. Let's support him. This is a touchy subject. I get nervous talking about it, but that's what I think. Anyway, we need to take a break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. I love this record.
Oh, Black Betty, bam, 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 Black Betty.
Yeah, they can't go wrong with that one.
They used to play this when I was roller skating with Darla. I know that that sounds like a lie, but I actually had a girlfriend named Darla when I was in eighth grade, and we would go roller skating, and that record was big. And, of course, they usually played disco. So when this song came on, it was really cool because it was like cool guitar rock.
I don't know if Black Betty quite strikes me as being a roller skating song, but
I know. I don't know how they'd
go like disco. That seems to fit with like a
yeah. It was very disco-y, which you know I had to do it because that's what my girlfriend Darla wanted to do.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
So it was like when they played Black Betty, it was a little bit of a respite for me.
They knew what they were doing with the music then.
I guess so.
Yeah,
yeah. It was probably the DJ was like, you know, screw all this disco. I'm going to play Black Betty. Yeah. You know, but anyway. Thanks for playing that song. I would have never had that memory. It would have been gone possibly for the rest of my life. Roller skating with Darla.
I know. Matt's got some newer music on his playlist now, so I got to throw a few classics in every now and then.
Yeah, definitely. Say, join Stephanie Miller, John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, and Frangela for Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour. The Sexy Liberal Tour comes to Minnesota. Next Saturday, April 13th, at the Pantages Theater. You can find ticket information at am950radio.com. But wait! Before you do that, you might want to call in because we're going to give away a pair of tickets to the sext. We're talking about sexagenarian. We're talking about sextet. We're talking about sexy liberal. Let's give it to the sext caller right now. On AM 950. So call in and win your pair of tickets to the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Tour. I'm a huge Stephanie Miller, sex fan. Well, that too, I guess. Stephanie Miller fan going back 20 years. I love her. So good luck to all of the callers. Where to go? Oh, you know what? You know where I was going to go next? I don't know if you've heard of... let's see if I can find. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of this Project 2025 that Trump is working into his whole. You know, he wants to fire federal employees. He basically wants to tear the whole thing down. He wants to be a dictator. He wants to tear the whole thing down. He wants to. Tear the government down. He wants to tear our democracy down. And so I find it these very interesting times because he's doing this, we're actually, you know how I said, you know, we've been taking too many things for granted in this country, and now it's kind of come up to bite us, and all of a sudden our democracy is being threatened. And it's, I think we need to rethink some of these things. I think we need to rethink how we're protecting institutions, how, you know, the powers that institutions do and don't have. Donald Trump has found people to figure out ways of infiltrating these things, figure out ways to get around these things. So maybe we need to change some things. So this is from CBS News. I find this really interesting. The government's chief human resources agency issued a new rule on Thursday, making it harder to fire thousands of federal employees, hoping to head off former President Donald Trump's promises to radically remake the workforce along ideological lines if he wins back the White House in November. I don't think he's going to win back the House in November, the White House in November, but no matter, I think this is a better way of going down into the through the future. So we don't have a chance of having another Donald Trump. Going on with the article, the Office of Personnel Management Regulations will bar career civil servants from being reclassified as political appointees or as other at-will workers who are more easily dismissed from their jobs. It comes in response to Schedule F, as in Frank, an executive order Trump issued in 2020 that sought to allow for reclassifying tens of thousands of the 2.2 million federal employees and thus reduce their job security protections. So he was starting to do it while he was still president in 2020. They were starting to implement this whole plan to take everything down when he was still president. But this just in, we have a winner.
We have a winner. Congratulations. Linda from Minneapolis is the winner of those pair of tickets to see Sexy Liberal coming up April 13th.
And Linda, who are you going to take with you? Because, you know, I'm kind of responsible for a big part of you winning these tickets.
Unfortunately, I don't have Linda with us anymore, so it'll be a mystery as to who she ends up taking. But she has two tickets.
I assume she's still listening. So, Linda, I don't know, maybe send her my phone number or something. Who are you going to take with you?
I think she should. If she's going to do that, she's got to scalp those tickets and maybe make some money on that.
We're giving you a lot of ideas to do what to do with your tickets, Linda.
Don't do that. Don't scalp tickets. I won't be advocating for using the dark market.
I'm sure Linda is just like us and is a huge Stephanie Miller fan and can't wait to go see the show. So congratulations, Linda from Minneapolis?
That is correct.
Okay, cool. So That was easy. I hadn't done that before, a giveaway like that.
And I should say before we move on, we are doing another giveaway tomorrow for tickets to both Sexy Liberal, the show itself, as well as our pre-party. We're doing that with the Wheel of Destiny, which I know many of our listeners are familiar with. We're doing the drawing tomorrow. The way you get entered, go to our Facebook page and like one of our Sexy Liberal posts. Interact with those posts in any way. Like, share, comment, and you'll be entered into that drawing tomorrow, which we're going to do live during the show.
All right. I can't wait.
The Wheel of Destiny. Oh, you haven't been part of one of those. Those are kind of fun to do.
I haven't. I'm a little nervous. Wheel of Destiny. Do I have to wear a costume?
Not quite, no, but we have some sound effects and music we'll play during it.
Okay.
We'll dress it up a little bit, yeah.
I'm not going to get hurt.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to maybe sign a waiver for you.
Okay.
Before we spin the wheel a couple times.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. So keep listening. Because you're going to be able to win more tickets tomorrow. And I'll still be on tomorrow. Matt's coming back on Monday. He is out taking a long weekend looking at colleges with his daughter. And I hope he's having a great time. So, we were talking about something completely different. Trump trying to take over the world as a worldwide dictator. And he began by signing executive, at least one that we know of, if not more, that I just mentioned. Schedule F, an executive order Trump issued in 2020 that sought to allow for reclassifying tens of thousands of the 2.2 million federal employees and thus reduce their job security protections. What he wanted to do, of course, is make it so that he can appoint people.
You need to be loyal to me first. then Lee Greenwood. After that, me, then Lee Greenwood. And then my Bible, not the Bible, but my Bible.
Anyway, going back to this article, President Biden nullified Schedule F when he took office. Again, he's on our side. But if Trump were to revive it during a second administration, he could dramatically increase the number of federal employees, some 4,000 at the moment, who are considered political appointees and typically change with each new president. How many employees might have been affected by Schedule F is unclear. However, the National Treasury Employee Union used Freedom of Information requests to obtain documents suggesting that federal workers such as office managers and specialists in human resources and cybersecurity might have been subject to reclassification, meaning the scope of Trump's order might have been broader than previously believed. So this, I'm starting to fall asleep now. This is, this article is boring, but it's very important. We are making changes in reaction to Trump's craziness. Biden reacted immediately when he took office. He nullified Schedule F. Immediately. He didn't take advantage of Schedule F like maybe some presidents would have. He nullified it because he recognized it as being the beginning of the end of our democracy. So Trump and his people, they've been planning ahead for years. He cannot be back in the White House. I don't know. You think, Brett, you think you and I would get thrown in the same van as we get kidnapped because we've been on progressive radio?
Yeah, it's hard to believe what could happen if he does get elected, because I'm of the opinion if he's going to do some really unconstitutional stuff, it's going to be very early in his presidency to try to set the tone. Those first few months could be rough if he does, God forbid, get back in.
Yeah, and I imagine Stephanie Miller will get picked up before we do because, you know, more people know her. But, you know, we'll be on the list somewhere.
And we'll likely be on a technicality, too. They won't use the direct thing. We don't like you because you're liberals. They'll come up with some other bureaucratic reason.
Right. Hey, this just popped in my head. What if we got thrown in the van with Stephanie Miller? That'd be a fun ride.
But, yeah, that'd be a little tough. She's out in L.A.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Trump will have ways to do it if he's back in, unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah. And the end of the ride will be bad. Yeah. I'm sure, no matter.
I don't think any of it will be good.
No. I don't think any of us would be in a very good mood during that ride. It would be like, hey, Stephanie, I'm a big fan.
Wish we could have met you under better circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. Say, we got to take another break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. Man, I have trouble when the talking over the singing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're supposed to talk on the ramp that we used to call it, the ramp of the song. We used to have like 7-inch records, you know what those are, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some people called them 45s because they were 45 RPM instead of 33 RPM. And bands would release their singles on them. And then, of course, we would get their single at the radio station. And, interestingly, one side would be the song in stereo, and the other side would be the same song in mono. Not always, because sometimes we just got what they sold in stores, but a lot of them made special singles for radio stations. So one side would be stereo for like FM radio, and then the other side would be mono for AM radio. And then we would write with a pen. We would go through, we'd get the song, and count out how many seconds be, you know, from when the music starts to when the singing comes in, so that we could talk over the top. And just, here's Aerosmith's new song coming at you on AM 950. Rock, Voice of Minnesota. And then Sweet Emotion would follow, right? You know, anyway, I can see you're bored. I know exactly
what you're talking about. Yeah. We did that digitally, though. We didn't have to write down on those things. We had a program. We have to go through and listen. All right, 7 seconds on this song.
Oh, but you still 18. Marked it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we still had to do that. Yeah, yeah, for the voice tracking, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know how much, yeah.
Wow, you know all about the digital world, and I know all about the analog world, or whatever you call it.
Yeah, just glad I wasn't around when we had to cut tape.
That was fun. I had a blast.
You had fun doing that?
I had fun doing that, yeah.
You're one of the few people that I think has ever said that.
Yeah, I loved making, you know, 30-second and 60-second commercials and making a special edit of the background music, you know, and everything. Yeah, I love doing that. So, anyway, you want me to do that here? I could do it digitally, too. I could do...
Here's all the audio files we're playing today.
I'm just going to do more and more stuff for AM950 with no pay.
And do it all on old school technology. Here, the clips are on the cassette.
Yeah,
I'll bring my
tape deck in and sit. You can find a corner for me to sit in.
Got all these great clips and they're all on an 8-track.
And I'm going through more stories in my head, but I'm on the air. Okay, I slapped myself back into existence here. All the things that I was talking about that we got to stick together on, it's not just us, you know? It's not just us who understands what's going on. It's not just us that understands that there's no way we can let Trump get back in the White House. I want to play you a clip and see if you can guess who this is.
If they were smart, they'd take the January 6th and go hard at it. And they would say, he wants to pardon these people who attacked our Capitol. I worked in that building as a young man. To me, the Congress of the United States is one of the great examples of the strength of our democracy and a jewel of the Constitution. And what those people did when they violently attacked the Capitol in order to stop a constitutionally mandated meeting of the Congress to accept the results of the Electoral College is a stain on our history. And every one of those sons of who did that, we ought to find them, try them, and send them to jail. And one of the critical mistakes made in this campaign is that Donald Trump has now said, I'm going to pardon those people because they're hostages. No, they're not. They're thugs. There were people, some of them had automatic weapons at a hotel in Virginia hoping to be able to be called up. We had people saying, where's Nancy Pelosi? We had people who were, you know, taking desks and sitting at the desk of the Speaker of the House and attempting to, you know, find people in order to bring them to justice and saying yelling at the police, kill them all. And so why Trump has done this is beyond me. If he had said, you know what? I trust our jury system. I trust law enforcement. Anybody who assaulted the Capitol ought to be... I mean, he said it once or twice, but now he's appearing in a video with people who assaulted police officers with an intent to take the Capitol by force. So, you know, look, I'm a Republican. I don't want to have a Democrat president. I want to have a Republican president. But we're facing as a country a decision, and everybody gets to make it, as to what kind of leadership we're going to have. And to me, it is a mistake on the part of the Trump campaign to allow the president's impulses to identify himself with the people who assaulted the Capitol rather than people who stand for law and order. Yeah. If they were...
Yeah, so we were talking about the George W. Bush administration earlier. Can you guess who this might be?
I'm having trouble putting a name to the voice I was hearing.
He used to write things on a whiteboard and just carry it around in his hands.
This is a politician you're talking, right? Or is this like a political commentator?
No, he was in the administration. Bush gave him credit for orchestrating his 2004 re-election.
Or we're not talking Karl Rove, are we?
We're talking Karl Rove.
That was Karl Rove.
That was Karl Rove. Yeah, you know you're Karl Rove.
I guess I do. Wow, I'm surprised he was saying that.
I know. That's why I wanted to play the clip. This is a
Democrat last... now, Karl Rove. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So
odd statement.
I mean, to me, I even think it's weird to see him call the Congress the gem of the country and things like that, because. You know, he was a complete trying to think of a word I can use on the radio that's still accurate.
I was going to say he was kind of the Steve Bannon before they went completely crazy.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
He was a very, very tame version of Steve Bannon.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Although I want to say so many words that I can't say to describe Karl Rove. But Karl Rove's on our side now. He even said, hey, I'm a Republican. I don't want a Democratic president. But we cannot have Trump. We've got a lot of people like him on our side. How many, more than 18 of Trump's cabinet members? First of all, most presidents don't have that many. He had to fire so many. So he's had so many participants as cabinet members that are trying to war the country. This guy is unfit to be president. And they're not going to support him. And they were on his cabinet. Chiefs of staff, former chiefs of staff of Trump, are trying to warn the United States that Trump should not be president. He is not fit to be president. So, you know, there. I just, I'm an optimist, and things like this. It feels good to have people coming together. And like yesterday, we were talking about some of the people as they come out of the MAGA cave. We don't want to be throwing rocks at them as they're, you know, being liberated from the craziness and coming back to our world, our sunny world outside of the dark cave. We want to welcome them and hang with them, you know? So that was a panel where there were three other Republicans along with him at some, I don't know what the event was, but it was a panel, you know, where they're just sitting up on stage and there's an audience and they're being asked questions. I think Reince Priebus was one of them and Adam Kinzinger. We know Adam Kinzinger's on our side and has been for years. Liz Cheney was at an event in Iowa, in Des Moines, Iowa. It looked like it was probably a college level basketball arena. So I would say maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people. What do you think? Do you know much about that size of, like, what's the, where the Gophers play basketball? Do you know how many?
Well, they've renovated Williams Arena. I want to say 10,000 or 15,000.
10,000 or 15,000.
Around there.
Yeah, that's about what I would say.
Usually
too.
Most major colleges are
especially
around
when they're seated on the basketball court, you know, when they're not playing basketball. So there was a stadium that looked like that. It looked like that size stadium. And it was jam-packed full. And people showed up to see Liz Cheney. I assume other people were speaking too, but there are clips of Liz Cheney speaking at this. People are really engaged with Liz Cheney right now, and she was getting a lot of applause by saying some of the same stuff we just heard Karl Rove say. And I think most of us are familiar with the whole Liz Cheney vibe here. Liz Cheney, somebody who I absolutely don't agree on anything with except that Trump should not be in the White House, and that we want to keep our democracy. And there are rumors, and you know, if the rumors are being let out as rumors, they're leaks, they're not rumors. But right now they're being called rumors that Liz Cheney is going to announce her endorsement for Joe Biden. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what happens. But let's take another short break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. 56 years ago today is the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated outside his hotel room early in the morning. And shots rang out from far away, and he was killed. So that's what happened in history today. Solemn thing, you know, things to remember, a reminder of what he did in our society in a time that was also very troubled, and he made things better. And he ended up losing his life because of it. But I just wanted to say that in honor of him. Here's another interesting thing that went on in Nebraska that ties into this whole plan that Trump and his people have. Working on things that most people don't even know exist. Nebraska is one of only two states that divide electoral votes among statewide and congressional district winners, which allowed Joe Biden to pick off an electoral vote in the red state in 2020 by carrying a swing district in the Omaha area. But Governor Jeff Pylon, or I don't know, who cares what his name is, Governor Jeff Pylon, a Republican and Trump, on Tuesday endorsed a proposal. Why is Trump working on this? The governor and Trump endorsed a proposal this last Tuesday, just 2 days ago, endorsed a proposal to return the state to a winner-take-all system, possibly upending the final days of the state's legislative session, which ends April 18th. So they're trying to get it in under the door, basically, you know, throw it in the door right before it closes, the last moments of the legislature, to make sure, because Nebraska obviously is always going to go, I mean, well, we don't know. We don't know anymore. We don't know anymore. Nebraska voted in favor of women's reproductive health care rights in a surprising way. But the fact that a Democrat was able to pick off one electoral vote, they won't even allow that. Now, this effort they were working on was put to an early test Wednesday night when Republican State Senator Julie Slama tried to add the winner-take-all proposal to an unrelated bill as an amendment, another way to sneak it in. The chair of the legislature ruled that the amendment was not germane to that underlying bill, prompting an effort to overrule the chair. So the chair says, no, you can't put that on this bill because it's so unrelated. That's just dirty pool, I think we can say on the radio. Sneaking in this amendment onto a completely unrelated, and the chair even pointed that out. So now they're going to do a vote to overrule the chair. And the woman who put it up, Julie Slama, Senator Julie Slama, she says, if you want winner take all in the state of Nebraska, this is your last chance. This is the last train out of the station. If we can't overrule the chair here, I can't imagine this passing on any other bill this session. The vote to override needed 23 yes votes to pass, given the attendance in the chamber at the time of the vote. Only 8 voted yes. So we've got a lot more Republicans on our side against Trump. In Nebraska, elected officials. In a text message after the vote, Senator John Kavanaugh, a Democrat who represents Omaha, said Republicans had few other options for trying to pass winner-take-all this session. They could attempt again, but we have to put a block on motions and amendments on anything we think they could attempt to attach to. And of course, they're not going to have another session before the 2024 election. I think the Republicans fear that there might be more than one. I don't know how many electoral votes are in Nebraska. Maybe there's only 2, but I would imagine there's probably more than 2. And I think the Republicans see it coming with women's reproductive health care rights. They recognize this, that they're going to just get creamed in elections. They already have been being creamed. Alabama, we talked about yesterday, for cripe's sake. So I think they're thinking, hey, we're going to lose more than just one electoral vote to a Democrat, to Joe Biden, in the 2024 election. And now we're right before that. You've been listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. I'll be back tomorrow along with Brett again. Then Matt will be back on Monday. But we'll speak at you tomorrow. Thanks a lot for listening.